The Common Good on KFSK is brought to you by the Petersburg Community Foundation, an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation. The Petersburg Community Foundation is devoted to improving the lives of the young, the elderly, and vulnerable populations, as well as creating recreation, education, and safety programs. The Petersburg Community Foundation, making grants to local nonprofits through a permanent endowment. More information at petersburgcf.org.
Good morning and welcome to The Common Good. It is 31 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock. You're listening to KFSK, and this is Hannah Floor. And today I'm joined by several members of the Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department. We have got Volunteer Fire Chief Jim Stolpe here in the studio, as well as Director of Fire EMS and SAR, Aaron Hankins. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yes, absolutely. And I have Assistant Volunteer Fire Chief Dave Berg on the phone. You there, Dave?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Excellent. Thanks for being here, you guys. I would love it if you would each briefly describe what it is that your role entails, because we've got lots of different titles, and I think it's not always super apparent what the division between the paid and the volunteer fire roles are. So just a quick description of what it is that you do.
Go ahead, Aaron.
So I was hired as the department head for the borough. The borough manager essentially has me run all of the volunteers and take care of a lot of the administrative day-to-day tasks of the department, stuff that, you know, would kind of be improper to ask a volunteer to do. Make sure the volunteers are get help, get training that they need, equipments, maintaining equipments, helping with budgeting, setting policy, and with help with the chief, and trying to direct the department's mission to where it needs to go. One of the things that I do is really, if it's in the buildings day-to-day, it's non-emergence stuff, that's more what I handle. And then when the tones go out, I just become a regular firefighter, EMT, and then the Jim and his assistant chiefs take over the incident command role of the given incident, and then he takes tactical control of the scene.
Okay.
And so that's kind of my role as fire chief is anything outside the building that we get called to is my responsibility to make sure that that's taken care of, along with Dave Berg and Mike Etcher to help me manage these situations to better work and function together as a team and get our mission accomplished safely.
He says as he raises the big bandage on his right arm.
I got a monkey fist.
And what about you, Dave?
Well, as Jim explained, both Mike Etcher and I are assistant chiefs and assist Jim in managing emergency operations of the fire department. Jim's asked me to take on the role of EMS chief, and then Mike has a search and rescue. And, the fire department's a big organization. We've got, lots of moving parts, lots of volunteers. The number of which escapes me right now, but I think we're, probably close to, 60 or 70, including all three branches.
71, Dave, pretty close.
71. Well, see, I was right on it. When we talk about management, we assign teams and we have other officers that are involved that help us out in managing volunteers at a particular incident, whatever it may be. And I also want to mention, Aaron didn't mention his role as also a volunteer. He's there, helping us out, Black Cat, just like any other volunteer who's not an officer to assist us. We really appreciate his dedication to the department.
I would also add real quick two things. Even though Jim is the volunteer fire chief and controls things tactically, he's also the ceremonial head of the department. So things like parades, special events, handing out awards, there's things like that. I try and help him get him prepared for it, but it's his pleasure and privilege to reward the volunteers as stuff goes out. And that Mike Etcher and Dave Berg also, even though they're liaisons for the EMS and search and rescue branches, they also assist with fire response.
Okay.
Yeah. And then being the fire chief also kind of sets me up for the first one to be hung out to dry. So it's part of the role.
You're ready for it.
The crown weighs heavy.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons that this felt like a good time to ask you all to come in is that last Thursday, 1 week ago, Petersburg's Catholic Church, St. Catherine of Siena, caught fire. And that fire lasted for nearly 10 hours. Dave, in an interview with KFSK's Thomas Copeland, you described it as the worst you've seen in a quarter century. And we just got, information about, about what happened with that fire. There was a news update from Thomas this morning. Can you guys give us a little bit of an update? And then I really want to hear what it's like to actually be fighting the fire. What's going through your head?
Go ahead, Aaron.
So at this time, our fire marshal, Ryan Wilde, has concluded his investigation. We did have the insurance representative from the church helping go through that and ruling anything out. We did conclude that it was related to groundskeeping activities as purely accidental, no malicious intent. And essentially the fire had caught skirting of the building on fire, and it ran up inside the building and was allowed to kind of percolate and collect smoke and, unseen, in kind of a closed-off area of the building.
The wall was like 8 inches thick, so you had a dead space. Not inside the building, but under the outside skirting. Then there's a styrofoam block. And so there's a dead space of where the fire ran.
And it just hung out there for a while, kept gathering
heat.
Yeah.
It ran up that rigid form insulation that was probably close to 8 inches thick. Ran up the wall. When it ran up the wall, it surrounded a window kind of in the kitchen office area. And it proceeded to burn into, that's how it originally made entry into the church.
Oh.
It also continued up the wall into the roof that had that same type of rigid board insulation. And it was allowed to essentially run through all the cavities that had foam with completely through the roof. And just continued to expand and then burned down and in, as well as continue to expand in from that window area.
Hannah, you asked what it was like to fight the fire. The first thing that we are notified of is a tone that comes out from police dispatch after they've been notified that that fire department is needed. And this was paged out as a major fire at the Catholic Church. Sometimes if we get a fire alarm and there's not much to it, but when you hear the term major fire, it's basically all hands on deck and you drop everything you're doing. I happen to be unloading fireworks out at AML and everybody's doing their jobs. We're not standing by at the fire station. The volunteers are caring about their normal day of business. So we drop everything we're doing and, we go to our assigned positions, whether it's to, go to the station to grab an engine. Perhaps it's to go to the other station, Station 2 out at Scow Bay, and grab something there, depending upon what the call is. So all the chiefs went to the scene. When I rolled up, I came down the hill from the Lutheran Church and approached it that way, and there was major fire already showing right in the center of the building. So, pretty intense feeling when you're presented with that kind of a situation. And you're quickly trying to negotiate in your mind how you're going to handle this type of an emergency.
Yeah, the adrenaline gets pumping really good. I mean, from the first tone out, you're going, oh my, fire call. Oh, here we go. And then when you hear the backstory to it, it even gets you going more. Same with EMS calls or a search and rescue call. That adrenaline gets pumping and you got to kind of make sure you take a breath and, you know, calm yourself down a little bit so you don't end up somewhere where you're not supposed to be.
he says as he raises his arm again.
So the adrenaline part is what you really need to try to control at these situations. And yeah, after the first tone, it's for this particular deal, it was an all hands call, just based on the size of the building and not knowing which, where, what, how, mm-hmm. on something like that. Had it been a simple trash can fire outside of the building that looked like it was really bad, mm-hmm. oh, well, come on, I just need four or five guys and we can get this out early. But when you got smoke and flame shooting through the top and on the side, you're kind of going, yeah, we're behind already.
So I completely agree with everything they just said there. When he said that all call means they actually toned for fire and EMS at that same time, the police were actively trying to make sure that everyone was out of the vicinity and surrounding buildings just to make sure everyone was safe. We don't necessarily get that immediately, so it's just assumed if there's major fire, send an ambulance anyway, just in case mm-hmm. someone is hurt on scene, and we can always turn them around later.
I think Jim feels like we're rubbing it in here.
it's okay.
Also nice to have it on standby.
Yeah.
If
it's the worst fire that we've had here in Petersburg in 25 years, do you arrive on the scene feeling like you've trained for this? Do you feel like you're ready for a fire that bad?
Yes.
I can't speak to what happened 25 years ago, but I felt like we had flames going, and it showed up immediately. You start putting the heavy water on it. We started with our deck guns, and then we started laying out so what we call blitz fire. It's that blue hose that you see on the front of the truck, and kind of staging in front of it just to get a sheer amount of volume of water on it, trying mm-hmm. to get it knocked down. And then after that, you start looking at other operations that you can do, such as, you know, trying to get access to where the fire's hiding, mm-hmm. as example, in the roof.
Yeah.
It takes manpower to do. We initially started that fire. We had three trucks roll, and we're down on scene. But we had three chiefs on scene. We had seven firefighters leave the station when the tones immediately dropped, and then as the hours progressed, we had people kind of trickle in back to town for a total of 18 firefighters. That's including three chiefs and three engineers, so you have three guys that have to stay and operate the individual trucks. I actually was one of the people operating Engine 8 to begin with, and then as soon as I saw Dave and, you know, they needed more young manpower, I was like, Dave, come engineer for me. And I was allowed to switch out and then mm-hmm. try and start roof operations.
One of the things that I wanted to know about is, I think, I don't remember who it was, but somebody told KFSK's Thomas Copeland in his initial story that the fire could have been contained much more quickly if you'd had more volunteers. Jim, you're shaking your head at that?
You don't agree?
I don't agree with that because it'd be great to have 1,000 volunteers, but when you're already behind, we were behind before we got there because the fire was already in the false wall mm-hmm. and moved up into the roof. So we were already behind, and whether we would have had 100 guys, I'm not saying guys to be... Mm-hmm.
100 people.
100 people, sorry. Mm-hmm. We still would have been where we were.
Yeah.
That's the given. The fire was already going. The fire was already making its way through the building, and we just showed up and did the best we could with what we have, and that's kind of where we're at is... You do the best you can with what you got.
Mm-hmm.
And I just disagree with that. I mean, yeah, it would have been nice to have those extra 10 people to spell guys out and say, hey, I need a break. Can you take my hose and do that rotation where you go in for 15 minutes and somebody spells you. And then that rotation, that would have been great. But No.
One of the big problems that we had, I spoke earlier about running up and doing trying to vent the roof so we can get water inside of the roof. That fire, from the time I got up there and actually started cutting, actually burned underneath me and kept forcing me closer and closer towards, I think it's 3rd Street, until Jim finally had to call and tell me get off the roof because it was moving through that false wall so quickly. If we'd got there, you know, a little bit earlier, we might have been able to do something. But when it's in the wall like that and it's protected from actually hitting the base of the fire with, water or extinguisher or whatever, you're kind of already, the stage has already been set.
Right. One thing that
I mentioned that.
Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Mentioned that building construction is a real important part of defending a building when there is a fire in it, and knowing, you know, the fellowship hall especially had they were huge beams. They were about 8 inches wide, 30 feet long. They were above the fellowship hall, and above that was a 3 or 4 inch hand decking or car decking, we call it. You could actually drive a vehicle on it. You know, it was built like a tank up there. And then just a few inches above that, you know, besides being the foam, there was the tin. And the trouble that we had was extinguishing the car decking, the top surface of that, and the foam was burning. But it was trapped by the roof material. And so that's what cooled down the smoke. And so cool smoke goes downhill. And that's why we had the smoke problems down into all the buildings downhill from that.
Yeah.
So if we had been able to vent the building earlier, then that heat could have been dissipated and gone up and would have allowed us to put more water, more wet stuff on the hot stuff.
There's so much strategy that goes into this that I think the general public doesn't realize. What else do you
definitely
think?
Definitely big science.
Yeah. What else do you think that the public doesn't understand about firefighting and specifically the Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department?
Go ahead, Dave.
One of the things that comes to mind is the importance of the volunteer fire department to the community. Not only do we provide day-to-day, rescue operations through search and rescue. A lot of times the community doesn't even know that we've taken the emergency boat out at the, at the call of the Coast Guard to look for somebody and assist, they see the ambulance on the streets, but we get, calls, sometimes 20 or 30 a month for EMS, response. You don't hear the fire sirens very much because, building construction and stuff over the years has improved and there are less fires. But yet the challenge that we have is to keep a crew that's ready to respond to any of these incidents. We have a training programs that are required by EMS, to be licensed by the state to respond, in a medical sense. We're sponsored by a medical director, Mark Jasillo is our medical director, but, EMS requires, recurrent training and calls in the middle of the night, et cetera, frequent calls when somebody falls out of bed or trips and falls getting up and going to the bathroom. And that's our biggest challenge, is to keep, enough volunteers on hand, especially for fire and EMS.
One of the things I'd add is that we are, personnel-wise, Fire and EMS, we boast, as of the end of June, when I last updated my rosters, we have 30 people in the fire branch total, 27 people in EMS, and 36 in search and rescue. And that sounds like a big number, but normally I don't get all those people at once. People are down, people are injured. I actually have a list here of how many I actually do have ready to respond. For fire, I have, as of when I made this report, I had 5 guys that known available. I had 5 guys in EMS, two of which are actually EMTs. The other three are drivers, and they can't roll without having an EMT on the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of my search and rescue crew is actually Forest Service employees.
Yeah.
And they're all on QU right now.
Yeah.
So, it's a challenge. I mean, you know, the five, you're talking five, take three off, that's two. I mean, this is what the challenge for us is, to find those people that have the heart to help others. That's the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And we do our best when we do find those people. We try and, you know, we're as accommodating as we can be. We do have to keep up certain standards of training.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
we can't have someone never show up. But, I mean, if you can only work, you know, if your work schedule only allows you to work, you know, like 3 days out of the week, we need those 3 days if you can give them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try and tailor and do our best to accommodate while still keeping up standards of training to make sure everyone stays safe and is knowledgeable in what they're doing.
And some of the other challenges with that are to train but not be able to put your training into use, which is a good thing,
mm-hmm.
but it's still that challenge. Oh, are we going to do this again?
Right.
That comes into play a lot. And so you have to kind of think outside the box a lot and, hey, well, let's change it up just a little bit to make it a little bit more fun to get the training involved. Or, hey, you guys partnered up last time. Why don't you guys find different partners this time and work with a different group? So that part of it is always a challenge, I think, not just for our department, but for any department anywhere, is to keep that readiness available.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, oh, okay, I'm good to go.
Keep complacency out of the mix there.
Yeah, keep the motivation going if they haven't seen the action that that might motivate them to.
Right. And I suppose the challenge, like, is like, you know, and I'll hearken back to a long time ago, ask not what your community can do for you, but what you can do for your community.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty.
Yeah. Do you think that it is different finding volunteers here in Petersburg than other places? Are there constraints here that don't apply?
In some respects, it depends. For us, we're island locked, so mm-hmm. we have nobody to count on but ourselves. If we were in Seattle, just north of Seattle, one of the small suburbs, different story, because they have a bigger draw, for one thing, plus they have a mutual aid program, which is a program that you sign up with your neighborhood departments and go, well, if my guys are out, can you guys come help us, or can you watch our area while we're over here doing this?
Down south, you see that quite a bit with mutual aid. So, you know, other departments will help assist and fill gaps, and they actually can communicate quite a bit. And when they do recognize those gaps, they can have another department help cover. Unfortunately, on an island where we only have the one department, we don't have that option. If we don't go, your options get very slim very fast.
Mm-hmm.
We will always try. And that includes, you know, most part borough-wide, if we have the resources to do it. Our first duty is to service Area 1, just how in borough code's written. If we do happen to have extra, volunteers available and we can go out to Babke's, if we can run over to Kuprinoff and go provide that, you know, medical service or something,
mm-hmm.
We do our best. But that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah.
We're a non-discriminatory volunteer organization. So if you have a summertime job, but you can respond in the winter, touchdown,
mm-hmm.
we'll take you.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole picture about a volunteer organization. It takes multiple disciplines from the community, you know. And here you go, you got... during the hearkening back to this last fire, one of the guys said, well, yeah, I, I was on my boat, so I parked my boat, brought his boat back in, parked it, and came up the dock and grabbed his gear and came on down. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how it works.
You said you're looking for people who have the heart to do it.
Yes. What
do you mean, have the heart to do it? What do you need to be able to do it well?
Go ahead, Jim.
I'll no, you go ahead. I don't want to cry on.
We're looking for community volunteers, or people in the community that have that sense of community that they want to help protect it and to provide a service that's greater than just themselves. If we can harness people in such a way that, you know, hey, I want to give back, but I'm not sure how, I mean, we will find a spot for you. I mean, even if it's, you know, you don't have the physical ability to go in a fire anymore, or you don't have the physical ability to lift. If you can, you know, lift a 20 pounds, you know, air bottle, or, you know, pack water, or, you know, help run supplies around the fire scene to the people who actually are going in the building. I mean, there's many different types of aspects to, you know, specifically firefighting that can be fulfilled without having to go into a building.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
That is, same rings true for search and rescue and EMS. There's always someone that needs to run that, you know, documents, do administrative type things, help provide supplies, kind of almost be like a gopher in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, anyone who feels like they can fit that need.
It does start with someone who's got it in them, who feels the need to support their community and to devote some amount of time in their life to the training necessary to make the tasks safe. And like Aaron mentioned, we have drivers for EMS. They have little patient contact. They might help carry equipment. But, you know, the training for that is minimal. So you carry a pager. If you're available, you come. You got a radio. You know, you keep in communication with the crew. We have a schedule to sign up on for EMS so that we know in advance where we're short, where we're code red, if we call it. As far as fire is concerned, the training is, you know, commensurate with your abilities. People come on board with no training at all. And first of all, we outfit them with gear and we teach them about it. And then we teach them about air packs and maybe, you know, ladder operations. And, you know, slowly but surely at our weekly drills on Thursday nights, we bring them up to speed with the skills necessary to respond to the incident that we have. It might be firefighting. It could be extrication of a patient from a car accident. You know, could be, you know, a number of things. You know, response to a gas leak in a building where we have to evacuate people and just make sure that, you know, that everyone's safe. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of jobs, as Jim and Aaron, you know, talked about. So,
yeah.
You know, place for everyone.
Well, we are just about out of time. Jim, I want to give you a chance to get one last word in to answer that question before we wrap up.
Well, the heart is something that, in my mind, there's nothing stronger than the heart of a volunteer. So those are the people we're looking for that want to drop what they're doing, come help the community. Sorry.
That's all right. Jim told me I wasn't allowed to make him cry on air, and I took it as a challenge.
Well,
goofy.
We do rely on that. You know, we all have a heart to help help people.
Yeah.
And we, as the Volunteer Fire Department and EMS and Search and Rescue,
yeah,
understand that there are other things in people's lives.
Correct.
There are times when they cannot drop everything and,
yep,
and come.
Yeah.
But we're willing to work with people. And I tear up talking about this too. I'm right there with you, Jim.
And one last thing for me is big shout out to the community for showing up after and helping the crew. That was really decent. Seeing the kids' pictures on the sidewalk, and pretty cool.
We had quite a few people show up, help us clean up afterwards, providing supplies and stuff, and that was a wonderful thing to see. So we thank the community for their support.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we had volunteers from the Coast Guard come up, and and food was brought by the locals, and even now we're getting response from the community that, hey, let's let our restaurant buy you a meal. It's really, really heartfelt to be part of the community and to feel beloved.
Yeah, I'm not trying to insult anybody when I say the heart part of it, but I mean that's just how I feel. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody took that personally, I apologize for that.
We recognize, I guess, what Jim's trying to say is that there's many different ways of helping in the community.
Yeah.
There's so, like, even the church themselves, they do the soup kitchens and they, help around town.
Just and volunteer.
Many of our other volunteers are actively involved in other organizations.
Oh, yeah.
So usually if you get hooked on one, you get hooked on the other. So it's the spirit and attitude we're looking for the just the, as Rotary would put it, service above self.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Well, we are out of time. I really appreciate you all coming in here. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having us. Yeah. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
The Common Good on KFSK is brought to you by the Petersburg Community Foundation, an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation. The Petersburg Community Foundation is devoted to improving the lives of the young, the elderly, and vulnerable populations, as well as creating recreation, education, and safety programs. The Petersburg Community Foundation, making grants to local nonprofits through a permanent endowment. More information at petersburgcf.org. Thank you.